Hello and welcome. I'm Jacinta Bolsenbrook from the Grower Group Alliance, your host for Making the Call, Farming Decisions in WA podcast. Now, it's a mini-series exploring how Western Australian grain growers are making smarter, more informed nitrogen decisions on farm. This series is brought to you by the Grower Group Alliance and 8 West Australian Grower Group project partners. Each episode, we'll be heading out to a different region to hear from local growers about how they're balancing risk, reward, and investigate how they're making nitrogen efficiency and usage decisions in their farming systems. This podcast is part of the RiskWise National Risk Management Initiative, a $30 million GRDC investment helping growers navigate key decisions around nitrogen management, sowing times, and machinery investment. So, join us as we unpack the thinking behind making those tough calls and the people making them.
Hi, I'm Tina Asprey from Facey Group, talking today to Jeff Pulteney. Jeff, you can start by telling us a bit about yourself. How long you been farming? Where's the farm?
Yes, good day, Tina. So, what am I, 54 now. So, grew up on the farm, 42 k's east of Pingerley in the Pingerley Shire. Went to ag school for 2 years and came back home in the late 80s and been here ever since. So, yeah, been grain and sheep farming. Haven't really changed too much through the bad times with sheep. Obviously, got to more cropping, as you do, like in the last, since the late, 90s probably.
And what are your main soil types?
Oh, main soil types? Well, probably the original vegetation, a lot of it is white gum and sheoak vegetation, so you lead to a lot of sandy loams. But pretty diverse. You've got haven't got too much rural light sand, but and small patches of clay, some heavy gravel, but mainly just sandy loam, which you'd call good white gum. And probably not a uniform base of clay underneath. It's pretty varied. Mm-hmm. The clay is not that close to the soil, so it makes probably amelioration a bit difficult at times.
Yeah. Have you done any internal claying on the place?
No, I haven't done any claying. Tried other things, deep ripping amelioration, but yeah, so definitely you'd probably say we're lighter on the lighter side of soil types and probably East Wickham and Shire and those areas, a bit heavier country. But
yeah. So what's your typical rainfall?
Probably 350 mils, you'd say.
Cool.
My growing season would be a little bit less than it.
Yeah. What's this season been like for you so far?
25, yeah, it was an interesting season. We haven't had a bad one for a while. So very spasmodic start, probably some early rains in March and April, but really only just enough to get out of the ground and then nothing in May. So by the start of July, things are looking really bad. Look, probably the worst germination we've had for a long time.
Some really patchy canola?
Canola wasn't too bad because that was just moist enough and had like a 9 mil on it. And then there was one more 14 mil, and by the time you were doing the cereals, things were drying out. And it was May, you just go, and you knew you probably shouldn't be seeding it, and there's no moisture underneath chase. So you're just seeding and thinking, you're hoping for the next rain. And you make it powder in our soils, you make it powdery, especially canola, stubble, stuff that had been stubble crunched, was probably worse. So germination wasn't that good, and you don't like looking at it. But so it started July, still hadn't had much rain in June, and the high pressure systems were just too low. You thought, this is going to be a bad year, but it ended up July, August, 100 plus mil both those months and actually got wet by mid-August.
Yeah.
And it's turned around a lot, so it's pretty, you never know, do you?
No. Did the patchy start affect your nitrogen decisions this year?
Yes, early. You weren't rushing out because we put probably gets about 40 units at the start with 70 to 75 of UAN. So it's enough there, except for canola, because you use wetter. So yeah, on the canola, you're itching to get back as soon as you can with applications. But the rest of it, you're pretty comfortable to wait because it's so dry. You're pretty comfortable that there's enough there. A lot of the stuff on lupins and pasture that have got a bit of in there anyway, they've probably got enough for this. Once we give them that 40 units at the start, you don't give them any more anyway. So you really worry about the canola.
Yeah. So did you end up doing second applications this season on the cereals at all?
I did, yeah, go by just all the stuff that's barley on barley Yeah, you just give them another go.
So once it started raining.
Yeah, I have to look in the book, Dana.
Yep.
Yeah, it would have
just been more delayed than.
Yeah, it would have probably been. Yeah, there's nothing early. There was definitely, you weren't rushing out late May, mid June, like some years.
Yeah.
Sitting waiting, which was easy in a way.
Yeah, it could be worse, couldn't it?
And you weren't, like, sometimes if you went early, you're getting it on because even though it might not be the right stage, you know, well, if you get one more rain, you won't get on it. So that always gets to the timing of your decision too. If you know you're not going to get on it, you've just got to go that week, don't you?
Yep. So comparing 2025 to 2024, there's some similarities with the season where we had that sort of slow and patchy start and then came good. Do you feel like you learn any lessons from 2024 heading into 2025, or you just have to take each season
with end, or just
with
everything?
With everything.
Oh.
And with end.
Yeah, probably. But you probably learned that you're not setting in the right conditions, but you're not going to stop. Yeah, I say to that daughter Sarah, like, when you're seeding in a dry and powdery, you say, we shouldn't be doing this, but what are the other options?
Yeah.
You know, you stop your program. We did do one paddock, just waited, and that was seeded the 1st of June, which I haven't done that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Just left that one, and they had 15 mil of rain or whatever, and it come up perfect. But if you did that for the whole lot, you'd be finishing by the 10th, 12th of June, and then it's probably just too late, isn't it? You look at that paddy, think, that come up beautiful. You'd rather look at that and then the other ones are patchy, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you can't risk your whole crop on that.
You can't.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a tough one. I don't know what the answer is there. I remember years ago, probably everyone went no-till the late 90s and we never really backed it. I think one year in 06, it was sort of similar situations that we stopped. It was to the margin of moisture, like, and you looked at it and think, no, you should have kept going because whatever you get up's a bonus.
Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So you just keep. We won't stop again. You just got
to. Yeah, because I was thinking the only other strategy you could have is to keep some short season wheat around or something.
Yeah, you could do. Yeah, that's right. It's something I want to say. You should have the silos full of long season, short seasons, and just go, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But do you do anything like that with seeding times?
Not really, because it's more when you get like good late March, early April rain. And then people want an option to put some wheat in.
Mm-hmm.
But we've probably, time you do your canola, lupins, hay, and that sort of stuff, it's probably, then, yeah, do some barley. You're not scared of doing barley. So you're probably not really looking to put wheat in that early. Where I know people that, further east that don't grow, they just mainly wheat lupins, they get that moisture in early April, think we're going to use it. They're scared to go because of frost, haven't they? But now they have some long season ones, say, oh, that bugger, let's just go in April and see what happens.
You've chosen a really interesting paddock. We're actually really excited about the paddock that I went into because it had a lot of stored nitrogen there. Give us a bit about the paddock.
Well, that was, I had to think somewhere where to put it, and I didn't know whether that would be a good or bad thing, having that with it was an area that was close to the road, easy access, I thought, and a little small paddock. So I thought that'd just be easy to come in there and that little triangle bit, just section that off so it wouldn't be anyone's road. So that was probably the reason for that. And no one said to be worried that it was in Cyrodiila.
Yeah.
And that was probably as to the intrigue of, that so much end potentially being there.
Yeah, that's right. Well,
so hopefully that can be a little outcome that might help.
Yeah, one of the outcomes of this project would be potentially looking at how much nitrogen gets fixed by various legume crops and how you can make sure your rotations are optimised to get nitrogen into the soil. So we're super happy that it had a 2-year history of Cyrodiila.
One year.
One. Oh, wow. Okay. That's interesting.
But with our history of total crop, that's the reason. Being total gardeners and then us and the SPA. So all these paddocks have been total crop since 1990. So no break, obviously big loop in there. So it's all just been N that's been applied, no natural N other than lupins. So it was actually. It's probably interesting to do it that one because I want to actually see as well, if it does come up, how much is there in the second and third years. But obviously, this looks like there's a fair bit there from the first year, but what are the results going to tell us?
Yeah.
What's that, brown manure, Cyrodiila, is there going to be any bonus N in the second and third years?
Yeah, I'm interested in that too.
Yeah, so that was one that little legacy. Test, but this could help.
So when it comes to making nitrogen applications and soil improvement decisions, do you weigh up the risk versus the reward of the decision?
I think you always do. I think it just comes back to history, doesn't it? of those paddocks.
Yeah.
You've in your head at the start of the year, you know, right, this is what, you know, most paddocks are going to get. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's easy to think about, oh, I've got to buy this much urea to do the second application or something. But I guess the upside is if I applied 10 more, how much more would I get? And that kind of thing. Do you look at it like that? Do you run it through a spreadsheet or does your
don't
do that for you?
No. Well, I used to go by past what figures other people had. And basically, I suppose to sum all it up, and hopefully this won't tell us in the years, trials, but what we're actually finding is with canola, you just give it as much as you want.
Yes.
Potentially still be there next year. So will we get more evidence of that it's still there? But with cereals, you can't do that. So you've probably got to be a bit more mindful of cereals not to go too much. But even though I haven't said that to her, I think sometimes where you've gone out with the last 100 or whatever, so 47 units of N, when you've crossed over, like and say little bits like that, and sometimes you might get three lots of it.
Yep.
If you haven't got auto shut off.
Yes.
Sort of. And sometimes that canola will lay flat in the ground.
Okay.
Like, so it's too much N. It's like just too solid
overdone. In
the
ground. Yeah.
So interested in the theories of people that say you can load it up, it'll all be there, which is probably right, but there is a tipping point where the crop won't handle it, will it? Especially if you get too much late rain, it'll just fall over.
So yeah. Not
that either.
Have you had much lodging issues? 2024?
Yeah, some years.
In the paddock with you, I think.
Last year you could see it, I
reckon. Out of 2024.
Yep.
Yeah.
Come up, and those spots where a multi-spreader would have run doubled or even tripled, they were on the ground, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there was definitely.
Really just too much in, I think.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
So, yeah, I think for the rest of it, you don't want to have not enough, but you don't want to give it too much, do you? So it's,
yeah. Yeah, okay.
So I think you have a figure in mind at the start and you just play the season a bit.
Yeah, okay. And are there particular seasonal cues that help you know, like if?
Well, you're doing N-rich strips, aren't you, and that mm-hmm. sort of stuff, so you have an idea. Yeah, obviously more rain, like we've talked about before, when there was dry at the start, well, you're not going to go, are you? Not going to go because the crops doesn't really not boosting away. There's no moisture to incorporate it. So you're not going to go. So it's really definitely a rainfall, isn't it?
Yeah.
And time. And then as you get, if you get too wet, then you're forced to go. You couldn't get it out there.
Yes.
Because you might otherwise it's plain or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And do you plan out the case?
That's a lot of years. Yeah. 22, those 21, 22, 23. The real wet ones had planes a lot.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just got wet quick.
Yeah. So did you do a cost-benefit analysis with that or you just know?
Just did it.
Just, yeah, it's got its own.
Yeah, you know it's costing you more.
Definitely. Don't think about
honestly,
it.
Yeah. You haven't got any marks, so what's that? Is that a couple of percent there probably? You're not making any wheel marks?
Yes. Yep. Yeah, but so that can be up to 4%.
Yeah, especially if you're going late. So, look, I think planes probably easier choice for spraying, but it's always a tougher choice for spreading because you don't really want to get a plane or helicopter to do the spreading because then you know you are too wet. You'd rather do it yourself.
Yeah.
But you have to. So you know it's costing you.
Yeah.
More than it should.
Yeah. So we talked about this previously. Would you describe yourself as someone who goes by your gut feel and experience or do you use data and testing?
Oh, we've always been gut feel, but as you're getting more and more data, so you lean that way. So let's hope in 5 to 10 years down the track that there's more instruments and tools and more reliable data. Because I wouldn't say the data's been reliable over the time.
Yeah.
Let's hope these projects like the RiskWise will make it more, yep, you can trust this data.
Okay. Yep. So do you use AgWorld or no?
Nothing.
Okay. Yeah. Because I was
put some stuff with Summit, like some of their probes. So that's do you know any of them?
The CropX probe?
Yeah, the CropX. So the potential of them, as Holly tells us, is what they can do in the future, what apps they can add to it, actually like reading plants and soils. That, I don't know, it's pie in the sky, but if those things come off, then we can really hit some home runs.
Yeah, they're an interesting one. At this point, I don't think they can read urea coming through the profile because, they're picking up conductivity.
Yeah.
So that would be really nice if they could pick up when the urea is coming through the soil profile. I really like to see that. But yeah, that's
interesting, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
We can get that, you know.
Yeah, I think there's going to potentially be a lot of technology that will come along.
Yeah.
We spoke about plant testing. What was your thoughts with that?
Definitely. We've used that every year. And it's definitely a good guide, isn't it, for everything, not just hen.
Yeah, you were saying we need one where you can do it exactly.
Yeah, oh, exactly. I love it. Yeah, I'd love it if you could have just, you could walk out of the bag, Tina, and say, pick a few plants and say, yep, righto, this has got enough hen for the next 2 weeks, or you need some more now. Yeah, just to give you more exactly what's there in the plant. I think, would you have to do the soil as well, wouldn't you? Because the plant might be saying that it's low in hen, but you do the soil and might an immediate soil test to say, oh, no, there's enough soil, enough N in the soil here, it just needs rain. So it needs a combination, don't you? But if we could get to that stage.
Yeah, that's right.
You wouldn't worry about the gut feel. It'd just be like, this is exactly what we've got.
Bingo, you'd have that data. Yeah. So some of the reason why you can't rely on data is because getting it in a timely manner, is a hassle. Yeah.
Tissue tests are good, but, you know, do you need them every couple of weeks because things can change?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So with the tools and advice, I was reviewing a range of tools that UWA has said is available for farmers locally. And the nitrogen ones, there's not a huge amount of them. I think there was about 4, Yield Profit, Yield Profit Light. There was a couple of others and things. I had expected a few more. But as you say, perhaps as more of this information comes through, that'll be used, that some more apps will be used. Do you change approach based on soil type at all here?
I think definitely, yeah. Yep. Obviously, a lot of soil's hungrier, needs more. But then I suppose you look at, you know, what's the top end, isn't it? Like, it probably doesn't matter. It's more those tidy years, isn't it? Or if price is high, do you go in your good country and try and make that yield more? Or how much do you spend on your poorer stuff? It's got a limit that's never going to go so much anyway.
Yeah.
So you definitely do.
Okay.
Yeah. And then obviously wetter country, you want to get out there earlier just in case you get that big rain and you can't get on it again.
Yeah, because I'm a numbers person. I think, oh, I'd run a spreadsheet on that where I'd be like, well, I've got this many hectares of good country.
Yeah.
And do a comparison or something.
Oh.
You're doing it in your head maybe?
I do. I guess you can analyse and do that sort of stuff, but it's not probably going to make my decision.
Okay.
Less of us, yeah. I don't think I haven't seen anything good enough to maybe change to that team, I don't think, yet.
Yeah, okay, yep. Have your strategies changed over time? So you've been farming out here for 35 years now. I feel like there's been a bit of a generational shift over the years you've been farming.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, I think things have changed. Like, everyone was pretty conservative, weren't they? Back in the 80s, 90s, it was like you're aiming, you know, with the old days, 12 bags was a great crop. You got 14s. That's 2.5-3 tons.
Mm-hmm.
So if you set on, you know, if you got 2.5 to 3, you were doing pretty well.
Yeah.
So you never fertilised. Everyone just gave it a bit of rear. That's what they did. One shot and shut the gate.
Yeah.
So and things have changed.
It was because we had tighter rotations with the sheep on the paddock a bit more livestock in the system.
They didn't look into it. I think they didn't. There was no liquid around then. So yeah. I think they just thought you don't give it too much. Probably worried about costs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Compromise that way was no one was pushing yields. They weren't like, if they got a big crop, it was just, oh, that was just lucky, you got a bit more rain than everyone else. Yeah. I think no one didn't take it to the next level. That's what's happened in the last 10 or 15 years. People are driving yields high, aren't they? And that's why we've got to do this stuff, you know.
And that's
driving the yields higher. You know, we've got to get the end right, don't we?
Yeah, and it's linked to land price, do you think? It's that I've got to really make this land work.
I think so, but ballpoint. I think maybe before was that. I reckon, yeah, 30 years ago, you were compromised because you had to watch every dollar. But now we've had good years, you're probably not. So it's just, if you think it needs it, you get it. So it could go the other way, Tan. If you've paid big money, if you've paid $5,000 for land, suddenly your budget might be tight again. So you might not go out willy nilly and spread extra in. You might be wanting to know exactly how many units. Whereas if you've got no debt, it doesn't matter as much that you don't want to waste it, but if you're tight for money, you will be, this is very critical.
Because my thinking is, you've borrowed X amount for the land, your interest rates are, you know, chasing you and stuff like that. You have to make.
You do.
Every hectare count, you know.
Just throw money away.
That's right. You don't even want to
overbuy it. As you get bigger, as you buy more land, what else do you need? You need machinery. So you're buying headers and sprayers that are worth well over $1 million. So I don't know. You'd have to ask these, you know, depends on every situation, but I wonder, will it compromise people when they've gone to big debts and big machinery debt? Will they, do you stop putting a lime out? Something's got to give, doesn't it? But we've had a good year, so it doesn't matter.
I don't know. It is.
So this information could become critical for both ends. It could become for the real big farmers that have gone, you know, a lot of debt, or, yeah, the other end as well.
Yeah. One of the other branches of the RiskWise project is about machinery decisions and how to optimise your machinery costs for your farm size. Yeah. And I think it is actually really strongly linked to your nitrogen bill. You know, there's the, they're both a huge, you know, check that has to go out the door and something that you have to plan well, you know, having a good machinery change out program and smart investing in your machines. But then that nitrogen, that's the other big check you're writing every year.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, yeah.
Well, no, that's the thing. It's got to be, you've got to pay all those other debts off, but you can't not, if the crop needs a bit more end, you've got to give it to, like in the old days that I'm talking about, when you see young and dad run the farm, like it would be like, if you need another 20 grand for to buy some urea, it might be like, well, you're fully overdrawn, you can't get it.
Yeah.
So you just said, no, we don't need it.
Okay.
But you look at the crops, so you're costing yourself money, don't you?
Back yes.
Days.
Yeah.
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 And you justify it because, oh, well, you don't need it.
Mm.
But really, yeah, but we're not like that anymore.
Yeah. Do you reckon there's any recent seasons where you've cost yourself money by not under applying?
Definitely always be some cases,
mm.
but probably more than you've over applied, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Gone.
Yeah.
But I'm sure there's always, like here, you know, this time you'd go out as it kept raining. You think you had enough, but just all the weaker patches, you just go to liquid.
Yeah.
All those patches that we were saying that germinated didn't germinate as well and germinated later, but they caught up and looked the same, but I just went out and gave them an extra 20-odd units.
Nice. Yeah. 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 So you've got a variable rate set up for that?
No, I just gave out, just, you know, where they were.
Yeah.
Just went out and just gave them a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah.
Good. So when we were chatting about the nitrogen banking trial. What was your big takeaway from that when we went through the results?
I don't know how much I was listening to that about it. And in talking to you, the big takeaway was obviously in the wheat, that's the one that got me there. Too much yielded less and blew it away.
Yeah. So
and to the question that obviously there was 48 units there, wasn't there?
Yeah, that's right. That sort of surprises me when you said it had been cropped so extensively for 30 years before and then you put one.
It shouldn't have been skipped on, I wouldn't have thought. It would have been enough every year to grow a reasonable crop, but there'd be none in the bank, would there?
No. But, yeah, so you built up that nitrogen bank in the soil with 1 year green brown manuring Ceradella.
Yep,
lovely, which gave us that 48 kilos
crop couldn't handle it
per hectare.
Yeah, that's pretty high rate, 120, but even the 60, a lot of farmers, that's 108, a lot of farmers would be doing that in high rainfall areas, isn't it?
Yes.
And yielded less. So that's, to me, that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because we need to know a limit, don't we?
Yeah.
We can come out of here and say, look, if you've got X amount in the bank, mineralised, you don't have to.
Yeah, you can save this bunch.
Yeah.
With your.
Not instantly, but you have to cost yourself fuel, don't you?
If
you?
Yeah, well, they definitely did with that nitrogen banking.
I mean, it's hot finishes too, like 23, get a hot September, early October. That can, if you put too much in on.
You're really.
Yeah. You really hurt yourself. So you think you're doing the right thing, but.
Yes. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see this season whether any of that's been banked. Yeah. Yeah.
So,
especially when we've gone into canola.
Yep.
You know, and see if we can make that money back in, you know, by having good canola years on that. All right. Thanks for that. Any other thoughts about the project or?
Well, yeah, that's one of the sales. I think it's just an important, I think, Tina, for when we come out of this to realise, if you can tell us when not to go as much as when to go, that'd be, if you come out with this guideline and say, yeah, righto, you need X amount of N, but sometimes you don't need it all. So I think that's some of the hardest, because it's easy just to go, isn't it? It's very easy to just say, well, it needs more N, let's put it on.
Well, maybe you as a farmer, I think there'd probably be as equally as many farmers who'll be go, oh, it's easy not to go.
Well, I probably used to be like that, but I think it's easier to go now. So that's why it's good to come up with the answers and definitely not, say don't go.
Yeah.
Like in your head, obviously, on this sort of rotation and loop and stubbles, you don't go, but all the other stuff, you just do go.
Mm, yeah.
So if you get some real data and real That would be just as important, I reckon.
Awesome. Thanks very much, Jeff.
You've just been listening to Making the Call, Farming Decisions in WA. This podcast is part of the RiskWise National Risk Management Initiative, a $30 million GRDC investment helping growers navigate key decisions around nitrogen management, sowing times, and machinery investment. The Grower Group Alliance Project webpage features more information, news, resources, and updates about RiskWise and the 8 Grower Group project partners involved. Simply visit the GGA website at www.gga.org.au. Head to the Activities tab and find RiskWise listed under GGA Projects.